Welcome to Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlene. Vegan Nation is an informational program about living the vegan lifestyle, featuring interviews with individuals and organizations who are practicing a healthy vegan lifestyle. Before we get into today's interview, I have a special message. Charlie Hebdo is the only French newspaper that dedicates a weekly column to animal rights. I would like to take this moment to give honor to Charlie Hebdo's lead cartoonist, Jean Cabou, for bringing light and love into this world with his cartoons that I have in front of me now that shine a spotlight on the injustice that animals experience at the hands of humans, including the French New Year's tradition to torture ducks to satisfy carnist lust to eat foie gras, the torture of an animal for her fur, the slicing of an animal's throat to taste her dead flesh, zoo animals, vivisection, and his most famous cartoon of a Spanish bullfight with a caption above the speared, suffering bull reads, "I have a dream." Yes, we have a dream. May all beings be free from oppression, exploitation, and violence. Merci beaucoup, Jean, wherever you are. Thank you very much for helping us to recognize that violence begets violence. Although the billions of animals who have been and still are terrorized by humans for food and research don't themselves retaliate, the violence inflicted upon them inevitably boomerangs right back at us, reflecting our own actions over and over again until we learn the life lesson to practice nonviolence and unconditional love. Today's program is about living vegan at 70. And joining us here in the studio is my guests, Daphne and Mike Stevens from Fiskdale, Massachusetts, who will be sharing their story of living a vegan lifestyle and their personal journey to veganism. Thank you, Daphne and Michael, for joining us.
You're welcome.
Glad to be here.
What does it mean to live a vegan lifestyle?
Well, veganism is vegetarian, first of all, but it's also paying attention to the source of your food not being, or ever, anything in your life not being an animal source.
And what are your reasons for choosing a vegan lifestyle?
My reasons come from my lifelong history. I started out always loving animals, always loving being in nature. And growing up in the 40s and 50s, we ate a very conventional diet of meat, potatoes, and vegetables, and I didn't really think about it. And at some point in my life, I was told about this man who was vegetarian, and I said, I'll never do that. I can't give up pork. But eventually, I found out more and more about the animal products we eat, and I decided I could not go that way.
And how long have you been vegan?
2.5 years now. And what actually did it for me was we had already started being strong vegetarians, had been for over 20 years. And we went to a vegan fest in Worcester. It was the first one we had gone to, and I was feeling pretty proud. I was eating the eggs from free-range chickens. And when I was at the Worcester Veg Fest, this woman we were talking to said, but the farmer who you're getting your eggs from is only getting female chickens. Do you know what happens to the male chickens, since half of all chicken births are male or female? And I said, no, I didn't know that. And she said, what happens to those male chicks? They are dumped into a machine that chews them to pieces while they're still living. Can you imagine the noise, the smell, the terror in those chicks? So I spoke to a writer who was selling his book at the Veg Fest, and I bought his book. And at that point, I decided I had to be vegan. I couldn't go in any other direction.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the time when Daphne said, we're going to be vegetarian. This is before vegan. And we were working on a farm, and we didn't have a lot of money. But one of the things that we realized was that meat was pretty expensive. And not making a lot of money, we had to think about how we're going to make it different and afford to live and to eat. So it was that was part of the reason. We started to eat a lot of pasta and started to more or less continue to think about what we were putting in our bodies. That was the start of it, I think, more than anything else. But I do remember saying, well, if we're going to go vegetarian, what am I going to eat? So that was something that was solved pretty readily.
I think it's significant that you both are here in the studio. 2014 is the 70th anniversary of the name vegan. It was coined in 1944, and it was by Dorothy and Donald Watson from England. And he was the president of the Vegetarian Society. And at the time, a group of the people chose to expand their circle of compassion for the female animals that we derive the mammary secretions, which is dairy, and the ovulatory secretions, which are eggs, and they chose not to participate in those products. And he needed a new name, and it was on the dance floor, and I know that you like to dance, Michael.
Yes, indeed.
And it was on the dance floor that his wife, Dorothy, came up with vegan. She took the first three letters of vegetarian, V-E-G, and the last two, A-N, and made vegan. And he said, let's make sure to pronounce it vegan to differentiate it from the vegetarianism. And seeing you two together, and you've been married for
47 years.
Yeah, so I think that's very significant. Thank you.
And you said 70 years since this was coined?
Yes, 1944.
Oh, interesting. That's when I was born. What's the connection?
What do you eat?
Well, we eat a lot of vegetables, and we eat a lot of fruits, nuts, seeds, anything that's delicious.
One of the things that I've understand people wondering about is, if you're vegan or vegetarian, where do you get your protein? And one of the things you need to do is look at what you're eating if you're starting out. I mean, if you look at the label on a can of beans, see how much protein is in a can of beans compared to the meat you're eating that may or may not have things you don't want in your body.
And I know firsthand that you are an excellent chef and baker.
Maybe a cook would be better. I think chef is a little bit too complimentary.
And what is your secret for the cookies and corn muffins and blueberry muffins?
Organic flour, definitely. I mean, we're learning things every day. I just learned something yesterday about the fact that wheat farmers are spraying their crops. Some wheat farmers are spraying their crops with, what's the name of that? Stuff.
GMO?
No, the Roundup. Roundup. To hasten the harvest and to make the harvest bigger, because what it does is it kills the plant, and the whatever nutrient is in the plant goes into the grain. If you think about the fact that some of these farmers are processing or growing the wheat crop that way, and it's not organic, think about the fact that you might be getting a small dose of Roundup.
Yes.
And your bread.
And I know that you are active in the Green Rainbow Party. And can you tell us about that in your meetings here in Worcester?
I've been a member of the Green Rainbow Party for about 4 years, a little longer than I've been vegan. And I was really amazed when I first went to one of their meetings. And we have a lot of our meetings in the center of the state, because we're all over the state. And we meet at the Unitarian Universalist Church downtown in Worcester. And where we get our food is from Belmont Vegetarian, because it's very important in the Green Rainbow Party for everybody to feel comfortable. And food is a very important item in people's lifestyles. So I always enjoy going to there and having our good lunches.
Yes, I've eaten there many times. And he has steak tips, barbecue chicken, mac and cheese, and it's all veganized. And Mike, what do you use for your dairy alternatives and your egg alternatives in your cooking and baking?
Oh, I was so happy when I found out you could have a substitute for eggs, because I make cookies like every 3 weeks. And if I have ground flaxseed and I have water, I've got an egg. 3 tablespoons, let's see, how does it go? A heaping tablespoon of ground flaxseed with 3 tablespoons of water, and you mix it up, and that's the equivalent of one egg.
And Marlene's eaten his cookies and thinks they're the best cookies she's ever had.
That's right. And here in Worcester, there are 3 vegan restaurants, and they have a lot of desserts as well. And I saw that you have a veg guide made by Veg Worcester.
Yes, we do. And we don't eat out much because our income is limited. And my husband is such a good cook. We'd rather eat his food, and we know where it's coming from. We are actually organic vegan. So we know everything we eat at home is safe and good. And so when we eat out, we go to Loving Hut, and they have a wonderful vegan chocolate cake for dessert. Also, we have a vegan chocolate cake recipe at home that is absolutely delicious. So you don't have to go without your favorite foods.
We're talking a lot about desserts here and not so much about what goes in the main course. But if it's tomato sauce, which we make from scratch, although I do buy organic sauce. And when I worked at the place before I retired, I would always take pasta and sauce for lunch. That was kind of a regular thing with me. One of the things I found out, of course, is if you're becoming vegan and you want cheese on your sauce or you want cheese on your pizza, at least for the sauce, you can use something like Nutri-Yeast. It's not the same, and there are a lot of substitutes for non-vegetarian and non-vegan cheese, so, and some pretty good ones.
The name I was trying to think of earlier, the book I wanted to recommend, is J. Morris Hicks' book, Eating Healthy, Healthy World. And what the other thing that vegan does, and my main reason for getting into it, was I feel very passionate about the earth. I always wanted to be outside, starting as a small child. And so what I did was I started to try to save the planet when I was about 30 years ago. And one of the things that started that was malathion was used to spray mosquitoes. And they kept saying how safe it is. It's really safe. You don't have to worry about it. Your children will be safe. And I found out it killed fish and killed the finish of our cars. So if it does that, it must do something to us. And that's when I really started to save the planet. Well, about 20 years ago when I started to be vegetarian, I learned how helpful it was to the planet. And then in the last 10 years or so, they keep telling us that the best thing you can do to save our planet, which is my passion and calling in life, is to be vegan. We use more land, more water, more food sources for animals. We have starving people in this world. So if we all became vegan or at least vegetarian, we would be helping to save the planet, which is the only home we have.
We've been listening to Daphne and Mike Stevens, and when we return, we'll be hearing more from Daphne about the environmentalist movie, Cowspiracy.
Hi, this is Barry Sullivan, inviting you to join me for the Sounds of Scotia every Saturday from noon until 2 p.m. for 2 hours of great music from Scotland, Ireland, England, and Wales, right after the Four Green Fields here on WCUW Worcester.
Hello Worcester, this is WCUW, Worcester 91.3 FM, and I'm Trooper Joe, and I'm here to keep it real for you on Voice of the Voiceless, Tuesday, 12 to 1.
Voice of the Voiceless with you Tuesdays from 12 until 1 p.m. Tune in on Mondays at 12 noon for Senior Speak.
This is Molly Narrow on Vegan Nation. We're back in the studios with Daphne and Mike Stevens, and Daphne's about to share her opinion on the environmentalist documentary Cowspiracy that was recently shown in Millbury, Mass, and is coming back to Central Mass in Sturbridge in February. What did you think of the film Cowspiracy that was recently shown in Millbury, Mass, and it is coming back to Central Massachusetts in February in Sturbridge as an environmental activist? What did you think of Cowspiracy?
I was very interested in the message of Cowspiracy because they were showing how the organizations that I belong to are frequently not discussing that being vegan is one of the best things you can do for the planet. And that really surprised me. And so even before I saw this movie, I had started writing the main organizations that are fighting for the planet. And I was asking them if their employees are vegan. I haven't gotten any responses yet, but I do know one of my favorites, Green America, has mostly vegan products, and they aren't afraid, has mostly vegan employees, and they aren't afraid to mention that they aren't afraid to publish their magazine. The one, the time, 2 months ago, was all about food, about vegetarianism, veganism, and they also had an article on the other side to show it about a man who did eat meat. So they're very balanced, but they will bring the issue out. And these other organizations don't want to talk about it. They want to talk about water or clearing forests, any of those things, but they don't want to talk about if people go vegan or vegetarian, it will help them the best.
There's one thing I want to add to that, if I could just take this opportunity, that Veganism is perhaps not for everybody, and I wouldn't, at least personally, presume to tell everybody that they should be vegan. I think it's a personal choice, of course. It's something that I don't at least want to come across as saying you should be vegan. I think it's more a question of just be aware of what you're putting in your body. Be aware of all the factors that are going into the food that you're eating. Make your own choice.
On that note, there is a children's book author named Ruby Roth, and she has written two books called Vegan is Love and V is for Vegan, the ABCs of Being Kind. And she was recently interviewed on Fox News. They really gave her a hard time and very criticizing. And her point was, it's education. Daphne, I thought of you when I listened to that interview with your article at World Peace Writers, which is a vegan writers collective, and you made a statement, what we learn when we are young, we learn best.
And that is true. We grew up, at least we did, with the meat, potatoes, and vegetables. And what we have to do is look and see what we are doing to ourselves, because veganism is more than just not eating meat, dairy, eggs, fish. It is also what other things that you're doing to your body, like cosmetics, have a lot of amazing things you really don't want to put on your skin. And it also has products in your house. There are so many things that are toxic out there that you want to protect yourselves as best you can. Animal products are in almost everything. So you have to read labels. You have to buy organic. You certainly don't want GMOs, which are toxins, in your food. So it's more than just not eating meat and dairy and fish and eggs. It's also what you wear. I happen to have on a pair of vegan shoes today that are made by Saucony. They were always my favorite running shoes, and I was so delighted that I could get them in vegan instead of the cow's leather being used to cover my feet. That doesn't mean I've thrown away all my leather shoes and belts because I can't afford to replace those things, but as things wear out, I will certainly do that. I'm wearing a wool sweater today that I bought secondhand, and by wearing this sweater, I'm not saying I'm not vegan. I'm just saying, don't waste anything, use it. And as things wear out, I replace them with vegan items.
Marlene, you mentioned, just to interrupt, Marlene, you mentioned the 70th anniversary of the word vegan. When I worked at Old Sturbridge Village, I was playing a character named Sylvester Graham, which you may recognize as being the source of the word graham cracker, or the phrase graham cracker. This is 19th century, and he was going around espousing a vegetarian diet. He was talking about the dangers of meat at the time. He was talking about the dangers of bread at the time, because bakers, if you bought bread, bakers sometimes adulterated the bread just to improve their profit line. He was pretty strict about vegetarianism, at least, I guess to a certain extent, veganism, because he did say do not eat meat and certainly do not indulge in greasy food and that sort of thing. But the diet of the time was certainly meat-oriented, as you might expect in the 19th century. So he was very controversial. But he probably was one of those people that got the idea that vegetarianism might be a little bit better than the status quo.
This is interesting to hear from the American tradition, and both of you having worked at Old Sturbridge Village for decades, you can't get any more American tradition than that. And also your experience in your own homesteading of raising your animals for slaughter in the past. And here at Vegan Nation, we'll also be interviewing in the future other individuals from many countries, the continent of Africa, India, Puerto Rico, Colombia, Vietnam, so that we can hear stories of personal experiences and journeys. Daphne, you recently organized and facilitated a vegan service at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Brookfield. So your passion to help the world become a healthier, better place is evident. Can you tell us about that service?
I had heard about this woman who is Unitarian Universalist and also does UU services. So I contacted our board, who chooses ministers to speak. Or we also have lay people, as she was. And she came to our church, she and a friend, and they brought all this vegan food. We have never had a coffee hour like that one. Everybody was just oohing and aahing about everything. The service was very good. There was a lot of music. interspersed with words. It wasn't hitting you on the head with a hammer saying, you have to follow this. It was just for education. It was very not intimidating at all, very mild. She and her partner were just wonderful. It was a double service that was very inspiring, and I wish they could do it every year because, unfortunately, I think I'm the only vegan in my church.
And speaking of music, there is a large movement in the vegan movement, in the black male hip-hop vegan movement, initiated by an African-American woman, Dr. Amy Breeze Harper, who is the founder and director of the Sister Vegan Project. And I know that you two have enjoyed the music video, Brown Rice and Broccoli, by the Boys and Girls Club of Metro Denver, which one of the vegan male hip-hop artists, DJ K-Vem, and his wife, Aracia Alchemia Earth, initiated. So it is exciting to see this happening. We need to start wrapping it up. Is there any last words that you would like to share?
Yeah, I think it was interesting that you mentioned the fact that we raised animals. Yes, we did. And at that time, when we were working on this job that wasn't paying us a lot, we decided, well, if we can't buy meat, maybe we can raise it. And we found out soon enough that there's a lot more to it than just doing that without the fact that you're thinking of the cost of grain for feeding hogs. For instance, we raised hogs, sheep, and chickens. So there were a little bit more of a learning curve to doing that generally made us decide that we were going to do something else other than that to supplement our diet.
And when we take them to the slaughterhouse, that was very painful. There is one last thing I want to mention. Last night I was fortunate to see a video on the web, and it was about a farmer who raises chickens for Purdue chickens, and he has come out in the open about what it is to be a Purdue farmer. And he said, yes, they are cage-free. They're absolutely right about that. But they're packed in these huge buildings that are so long that they can't move around anyway. And there were lots of violent pictures, which you wouldn't want to hear about. Very sad, very torturous. And the animals are very sick because of it.
Yes, thank you for sharing all that. As I see veganism, our goal is to reduce suffering and bring more compassion into the world, and having the courage to speak up, because it is a new paradigm, just like those in Worcester here in the past with the abolitionists and the suffragists, civil rights activists, women's rights activists. It is a shift, and we are very fortunate to have WCUW Community Radio, which is giving voice to the people that might not otherwise be heard on alternative and mainstream media, and telling truth in news and sharing our personal experiences.
Amen.
Thank you, Daphne and Mike, for coming into the studio. Could you please give us your contact information?
Well, my email address is Daphne T. Stevens, Stevens with a V, number 4, at gmail.com. There's two medical websites that I really like. One is Pam Popper, you can Google her, and one is Dr. Geiger, G-E-I-G-E-R. And the best book that you can read is The World Peace Diet by Will Tuttle, which explains so much more than you would think about. And you can go Google him and go online and see his website.
And you can read Daphne's excellent article at worldpeacewriters.org. And that's W-R-I-T-E-R-S, World Peace Writers.
There are also some authors that I have read many of their books. Doctors as well. T. Colin Campbell, who wrote The China Study, How People in China Don't Get the Diseases We Get. John and Ocean Robbins. Neil Barnard, M.D. I read a lot of his cookbooks, and he is the one who really explains how sick you can get by eating meat-based products. Dean Ornish, M.D. Joel Furman, M.D. and Caldwell B. Esselatyn, Jr., M.D. They're all excellent vegan doctors.
We've been listening to Daphne and Mike Stevens on Vegan Nation, where Mike has been sharing his wisdom on vegan cooking starting at the age of 70, and Daphne is a passionate environmentalist and how she wants to share the message of veganism to save the planet. Let's listen to one of Daphne and Mike's favorite songs from Will Tuttle's album, Animal Songs.
Thank you.
Join us next week at this time, where we'll bring you more news on living a vegan lifestyle. Hear this program again at wcuw.org/vegannation. Theme music provided by Will Tuttle. This is Marlene Narrow, wishing you a good day.
Welcome to Things of Interest, a program about our local world. Today we'll be listening to Sean Connors, a student at Worcester State, describe his recent travels in Nicaragua with the MANA Group.
We went down there with the MANA Group, which has been around since 2003. They're based out of the South. Worcester State's one of the only colleges from the North. We come down and we observe community centers that they've set up. They have a health clinic in La Chireca, which is the largest landfill, open-air landfill in Central America, and it's got a population of about 2,000 people that have been working there since the earthquakes in 72. Their job is to sort recyclables. It was created as a national job, and they went there to find work because of the state of the country and the amount of poverty, especially in La Chireca. They can't really get out, so they've been in there for generations. So by this time, it's kind of a tough thing to deal with because these people are kind of institutionalized to the point where that's all they know. There's like a little village. It looks a lot like tenement. Everything's made out of just rusted old shingles, things that they've found in the trash to make a house out of. There's just sewage running all over the place. We were only at the landfill. We went there 2 days, and we stayed each day for about a couple hours. And the first day I was there, we went to the school that was in La Chireca, which is fenced off with barbed wire. And you walk in, and all the kids come and jump on you. And they're all like so excited to see people that are wearing not scraps for clothing. They're happy, definitely. I mean, that's one of the things I noticed, is like people down there are at least as happy as people are up here. And they, I wouldn't say enjoy living there, but they're content with it.
Our thanks to Sean for coming in to speak with us, and to you for listening to Things of Interest. Produced by Barbara Roberts, Tess Aronson, and Christina Smith. Music by Donald Prang.